Thanks, Polina, for putting us on the stream. This is Julie Hewitt, the chair of the Pacifica National Board. This is a special meeting of the PNB. Today is Thursday, November 10th, 2022. It is 8:41 p.m. on the East Coast. Aki, would you please take the roll for this evening?
Sure. Here you go. Teresa Allen?
Present.
Okay, Teresa is on. Bert Cohen? So? Jim Dingman.
Here.
Jim is here. Vanessa Dixon-Briggs. Vanessa? Okay, I'll come back to you. Sue Goodwin asked for excuse absence. Heather Gray?
Here.
Okay. Donna Grimes? Donna? Okay. She's not here. Judy Hewitt?
Here.
She's here. Iveria Jones? Yeah, she asked for, I think, absence. Ari Raksa? Ari? I saw your name up there, but let me get back to you then. Marianne Martinez?
Present.
Marianne's here. James McFadden?
James? Here.
Okay, James is here. Darlene Pagano? Okay, she's not here. Ron Sayers.
Presente.
Okay. And Sean Rhodes.
I am here.
Sean is here. Jim Sagadin. Jim? I saw your name, I thought.
Here.
Yeah, Jim is here. Sharon Salam.
I'm here.
Sharon is here. Aki is here. Mark?
Present.
Mark is here. Beth Bunkinson.
Here.
Yeah, Beth is here. Egberto Willis? Can I hear? Susan Young?
Here.
Okay, Susan is here.
Arlene has shown up.
Okay. So 16 people, so we have calls at the moment. Okay.
All right, great. Thanks, Aki. I will read the report out from the November 3rd, 2022 meeting. The PNB met in executive session to discuss confidential information concerning a contractual matter, proprietary financial matters, and a disciplinary matter. The PNB also passed a motion to amend a previously adopted motion with an address correction for the KPFK building. Next item up is excused absences, of which we have requests for several. Can I get a motion?
Move to excuse.
Thank you. A second.
Who
was that?
That was Jim Dingman, and Heather is seconding. Are there any objections to excusing the absences?
Do we have a list of which the excused absences are?
Aki, can you say who the people not present this evening are?
Well, the one that I got was from, let's see. Sue Goodwin, and also from Iveria Jones. Those are the two I got.
Right, and put Bert Cohen on that list.
Okay.
Donna Grimes?
Donna Grimes as well.
Okay.
I object to excusing for the purposes of abstaining on the excused absences.
Okay. Abstaining or objecting?
Abstaining.
Okay. I'll note that.
So, are there any objections other than Lawrence's abstention?
I do have a point of information.
My abstention is...
Egberto Willis on that list?
Let's put Egberto on that list too. Sorry.
I'm sorry, Chair. I don't object to Avilia Jones or, Sue Goodwin. I'm just, abstaining on Bert Cohen.
Okay. Any other objections or abstentions? Hearing none, those absences are excused. Next item up is identifying timekeepers and recording secretary. Can I get someone to volunteer to keep time for people?
Chair, can I ask people to please mute?
This is Ali. I just wanted to say that I'm here. I finally got my microphone working.
Got it. Great.
Yeah, I got you noted.
Okay. Yes, and thank you, Marianne, for the reminder to those not speaking to mute.
Teresa Allen, please. Point of information. What about the ED and the attorney?
Oh, thank you. So let's call roll, Aki, for the five people who are listed, the other people there.
Sure. Purina? Is Purina on? John Taylor?
Here.
John is here. Stephanie
here.
Stephanie's here. Arthur Schwartz?
I'm not sure we expect Arthur till later.
Okay, so Mary Ann is also, there's only four right now, right?
And Markeisha.
Oh, Markeisha, okay.
Yeah.
Is she on?
I don't see Markeisha.
Okay, all right.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Teresa. Okay, so back to where we were on the agenda, which is identifying timekeepers. Someone to volunteer to time people?
I'll do it. This is Heather.
Thank you, Heather. And someone willing to time items on the agenda?
Darlene.
Thank you, Darlene. And can I get a volunteer to be the secretary for this evening?
I'll volunteer.
Okay. And Aki
with Aki's help. Right?
Yes. Aki will continue to do the roll call for votes if necessary. Okay.
Teresa Allen, please mute.
Oh yeah. Thank you, Teresa.
Point of order, Beth.
Okay. What's the point of order?
I'm getting reports from listeners that they don't hear the stream.
Okay. That's not a point of order, just to be clear. It's a problem.
What should I call that?
I don't know, but it's not a point of order, because a point of order maybe it is a point of order if we're breaking the rules to make the meeting public.
It's all I knew what to call it. Sorry.
It's okay.
I thought I should let someone know before it goes further. Thanks.
Helena, can you check the stream? And can someone else check the stream? I mean, not that I don't doubt that people are getting, but it's always good to confirm.
Stream is on. Stream is on right now.
I can hear the stream.
Okay, great. Thank you.
It's on. It's on.
Okay. So if there are people who are having difficulties with the stream, then I would suggest perhaps, you know, it might be an individual problem and not something associated with us actually streaming. Okay. Next item up is...
Chair, I have a question. Can you let me know when it's time to make a point of order?
Okay. A point of order is about breaking a rule. And we're between agenda item one and agenda item two, item two is agenda approval. So I'm not convinced that we're at a point where we've broken any rules yet. So.
No, I'm just requesting as to when I can make a point of order, Chair. When a rule has been broken.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, I wish to make a point of order, Chair.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. In Roberts, 23.6, the only exception to the requirement that the point of order must be made promptly at the time of the breach arise in connection with breaches that are of a continuing nature, whereby the action taken in violation of the rules is null and void. In such cases, a point of order can be made at any time during the continuance of the breach. That is, at any time that the action has a continuing force and effect, regardless of how much time has elapsed. So my point of order, Chair, is in regards to a breach of the bylaws. And the breach of the bylaws has to do with Article 3, members of the foundation, Section 5, rights. And if you want, Chair, I could quickly read that. I did send it to the entire board as well. I'm asking beyond the two attached appraisals that I sent to the board for KPFK and KPFK, I'm asking that my colleagues be afforded the appraisals for KPFT. The Radio Act of 1927 establishes the regulatory promise that the spectrum belongs to the public and licensees have no property rights to use it. Although the spectrum is licensed in to bidders, its purchase does not entail ownership or rights, but the privilege of using that portion of the spectrum. Pacifica Bylaws, Article 3, members of the foundation, Section 5, rights. All members shall have all rights granted to them by law or by these bylaws, including without the limit to vote on the terms and the matters set forth in these bylaws, on the election and removal of delegates, on the sale, exchange, transfer, or disposition of all substantially all foundation assets, on the sale, exchange, transfer, or disposition of the foundation broadcasting licenses, or any merger, its principal terms and any amendment of its principal terms, on any election to dissolve the foundation, on any amendment to these bylaws for which member approval is required or permitted as set forth in Section 1B of Article 17 of these bylaws, and on any amendment to the Articles of Incorporation. So what I'm saying, Chair, that the breach of the bylaws occur when we enter into a motion to look at selling the KPFK property, the KPFK building at 3729 West Cohanga Boulevard in North Hollywood. So that is why I'm making my point of order, because I believe we did not take a really thorough look at the way this was impacting our membership, and I believe that Article 3, members of the foundation, Section 5, member rights, have been breached. So I submit my point of order, Chair.
Got it. Okay, so I am familiar with Article 3, and I looked at this earlier. I'm sorry I missed your email. The point is, the rights of members of the foundation in our bylaws, says on the sale, exchange, transfer, disposition, and here comes the key phrase, of all or substantially all of the foundation's assets. It says some other things too, including selling, or exchanging or transferring radio station licenses, which is not at issue here. So, all or substantially all of the foundation's assets. The foundation at the moment owns three pieces of real estate and five, FCC licenses. And we passed a motion about selling one piece of real estate, and that was all. And so that's the sense in which I don't think the motion to sell, and note that we haven't sold, we've only, you know, decided to explore the market with the hopes of selling, of course, but so I don't think this is about the sale, exchange, transfer, disposition of all or substantially all of the assets of the foundation. So so I'm going to rule your point. How do I rule it, Mr. Tatum? Do I deny his point of order? Is that the proper verb?
And not well taken.
Not well taken. Thank you. Thank you.
Chair, if I could just reiterate one last thing, if I may.
Go ahead.
So our licenses are not owned by us. We hold them in trust. So the licenses are not assets. The licenses are something that we hold in trust, and the owners of the licenses are the FCC. So I will argue that the KPFK building being the most valuable asset in the network's possession right now supersedes the 5% that are required in the bylaws for a membership vote to be taken. The asset at KPFK at this point will be better than 50% of the total assets, since our licenses are not property. They are something that we hold in trust. So I will ask you to reconsider your ruling, Chair.
Madam Chair, this is
Go ahead, Mr. Tatum.
I'm looking
something up. Go ahead.
Yeah, this ruling, you have declared that it's not well taken. Remember, when we're appealing the ruling of the chair, each person gets to debate one time. Lawrence has his, and then the chair gets to debate twice. Once at the beginning of purpose of a ruling, and once at the end after everybody else has had one chance. And then it would take a vote.
Okay, great. I'm looking through our bylaws for references to 5%.
While you're doing that, there are two hands up.
Go ahead, Jim Dingman.
Why don't you, I'll wait till you finish, Madam Chair.
This could take a few minutes. There are a lot of number fives in the bylaws. Many of them are not the five I'm looking for, but go ahead.
All right. Well, I have a different matter. We had had a meeting several weeks ago where the discussion of the underwriting motion was deferred to November 10th. And today's November 10th.
Yeah. Hang on. I'm going to stop you right there just because we're working on the point of order.
Okay, that's why. Okay, fine. Go on.
I think we have to dispense with the point of order.
Thank you.
And then when we get to the agenda, I will recognize you for.
I would like to speak to the point of order, Madam Chair.
Hang on. One second. Let me maximize this again. So, Jim, Dingman, if you wouldn't mind putting your hand down and come back when we get to the agenda item. So go ahead, Susan Young.
Yeah, I would like to refer this to the general counsel. If there's going to be a challenge, it will be in court. The general counsel has already sent out word his opinion on this, and I do not think it makes sense for board members who are not attorneys to be disputing this question. I will vote to sustain the chairs. This is not well taken. But I really request that we ask Arthur to address this issue.
Got it. Thank you. Next up, I see Jim Sagerton. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just start by saying I don't see the need to have Arthur review this. I wouldn't mind seeing his opinion on it. I think we could do that after the fact. But I want to say that the argument that the FCC owns the airwaves is true. However, Pacifica owns the licenses, and that's where the substantial value of the network is. That's why I always say we are asset rich and cash poor, and the primary asset we have is the ownership of those licenses. And so that is why there is such a thing, and we all know it's a thing because we talk about it all the time, as a signal swap or a signal sale. So we do own those licenses, and that's where the value of the network mostly resides. Thank you. So therefore, the argument that was made that this is not a substantial or substantially all of the network's assets would be mistaken. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I see Darlene's hand. Darlene, go ahead.
So I was surprised to hear Jim say that, and I didn't take my hand down because he made my point. The FCC is in charge of the frequencies of the spectrum, but Pacifica has the license, we are the only possible users of those frequencies. So a license and the frequencies are different. That's me. Thanks.
Chair, may I ask for request for information if it's allowed?
Yeah, go ahead, Lawrence.
So the Radio Act, indicates, very clearly that licenses have no property rights to use it. And the only thing we could appraise is property. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence.
That's not a request for information. That sounded like...
I meant to ask if that was the case. I'm sorry, Mr. Taylor.
Request for information, yeah. Remember, members only get one chance to debate, and the chair gets two times to debate.
Yeah, okay. I have finished my little waltz through the bylaws, and the reason I was wandering through the bylaws, okay, frankly, I did a word search. I didn't actually read the bylaws in the time that just transpired, but there's no requirement of 5% in the bylaws. So the 5% threshold that Lawrence cited earlier, it does not come from our bylaws. So I just want to be clear about that. The next point I was going to make is I completely agree that we do not we have a license. You know, it's not a property right. It is a license to use these particular frequencies, you know, in these areas. And the license is granted by the FCC, but it is true, and there is an active market for license swaps, and what a license swap does is allow the party that owns the license to transfer it to another party. Now, that's not what we talked about doing in the motion, and so they have value, and the value of those licenses is considerably greater than the value of the real estate holdings of the foundation. And so that's the sense in which I do not think that the director's interpretation of substantially all of the assets is something that needs to go to a vote of the membership. I think it absolutely positively would be true if we were talking about a signal swap. We would have to go to a vote of the membership, but it is not true to talk about selling real estate. And for example, this is not the first time we've sold real estate. We did it twice within the last couple of years, you know, 5 years or so. And we did not go to a vote of the membership on either of those instances either. So that's the sense in which I think that pretty much sums up my argument there. Are there any other? Teresa Allen, I see your hand. Go ahead. Teresa.
I'm sorry. Can we move on? Orders of the day? Thank you for the ruling.
Yeah. So, okay. Thank you. So that's my ruling. So, do I remember correctly or did I hear correctly that, Lawrence appealed my ruling? So we have to go to a vote?
Correct.
Okay. So,
Jay, I did not appeal your ruling. I did not make a motion to appeal your ruling or challenge your ruling.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Do I have to not go to a vote then, Mr. Tatum?
That is correct. No, the ruling was not challenged.
Okay.
So it stands.
All right. So then we move onward. And moving onward, where we were on the agenda was we were up to agenda approval, which is a 5-minute item. Okay. So let me, quickly read, read out the agenda. So item number three is approving minutes, although we have no minutes to approve this evening. The fourth item is ED report and Q&A. That's a 15-minute item. The fifth item is general counsel report and Q&A for 10 minutes. Item number six is some unfinished business, and there are two motions under there. One is a motion to amend a previously adopted motion on delegate terming out, and the second is a motion on programming, and I believe Susan, this is where one motion is by Jim Dingman and another is a substitute motion from Susan Young. Then item number seven is a motion from the Programming Committee on Podcasting. Item eight is moving into executive session at a time certain of 10 p.m. There we'll have an executive report, executive session ED report and Q&A, an executive session legal report and Q&A, confidential disciplinary matter, confidential financial matter, and then the usual closeout from an executive session of discussing what can be shared with LSPs in closed session, coming up with a report out, and then we'll rise and report. That's a one-minute item, and then we adjourn at a time certain of midnight.
Move approval.
Thank you, Susan. Can I get a second for the agenda?
I second.
Thank you, Teresa. Any discussion of the agenda? Oh, yes. And this is, go ahead, yes, Jim Dingman.
Yes, I realized that things had been rather hectic lately, but several weeks ago, we moved to defer the discussion of the underwriting motion until November 10th. I distinctly recall that. So, either I make a motion to put it in right now, or we do it next week. We did defer the discussion of that motion until November 10th, and at this point, this motion has been widely distributed to the board for weeks. So I just raised that as a question to you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. And I will admit to a small degree of confusion and not enough time to do homework to figure out, what was really going on with that motion. I totally saw in my notes that we deferred that motion to the meeting of November 10th. But I also have, badly handwritten notes from last week's meeting about that we did something on underwriting, and it was something about a motion to rescind the underwriting. And so then I was confused about why we were, you know, if we had deferred it to November 10th, why were we then rescinding it? And I did not have the benefit of being able to go back and look at the actual meeting minutes. And the reason why we don't have actual meeting minutes is not because Marion Adain isn't the recording secretary anymore. It's because Marion's had some stupid stuff happening in her world in terms of power lines being down and, you know, things like that kind of have hampered her ability to get meeting minutes to us for those last couple of meetings that she was responsible for being the recording secretary for. So I didn't have the ability to go back and look at the meeting minutes. If you would like to put it on there, I would, you know, entertain an amendment to the agenda.
Why don't I put it on next week then? How's that?
That's great, because I feel fairly certain that by next week we'll A, have a lot more minutes, and B, we'll be able to, you know, sort out exactly where we were with the motion on underwriting.
I second Jim's motion.
Although I don't know that we need a motion actually to defer something. Well, do we need a motion?
Madam Chair, we actually made a motion to do it on today. So, but anyway, so let's defer it. I make a motion to defer this discussion to next week.
Fair enough. And Susan seconded. Thank you, Mr. Tatum. Go ahead.
Yeah, postpone. That's it.
Postpone. Thank you. Excellent point. Teresa, I see your hand.
You didn't vote on the postpone, but it sounds like it was unanimous consent.
Well, I didn't know whether Teresa wanted to discuss that. Susan, your hand's up. Did you want to discuss it or?
That's a legacy hand up.
Got it. Okay. Are there any objections to the motion to postpone discussion and voting on the motion on underwriting to November 17th? Hearing no objections, we will do that. So that leaves the leaves the agenda that didn't already have the motion on underwriting on it unamended. So any other discussion of the agenda for this evening?
Time for agenda setting has ended.
Thank you. Any objections to the agenda as proposed for this evening? Hearing none, we'll move on to the next item, which is...
Chair, I have a request for information.
Go ahead, Arthur. Lawrence, sorry.
Arthur, okay.
No,
I'm it's okay. It's fine. It's okay. I believe that we have to send out a notice to the affiliates that we are going to be accepting applications for directors on November the 15th. Is that correct?
Yes, we do, and I actually have plans to speak to Ursula tomorrow about this. Ursula might know that I have plans to speak to her tomorrow about this, but I have plans to speak to Ursula about this tomorrow.
And we're already working on it, actually.
That's what I thought. Thank you, Heather. Okay, so the next item on the agenda was approving minutes, and I just explained to you a few moments ago why we don't have any minutes to share yet. So the next item up is a 15-minute item, and this is the ED report and Q&A. Stephanie, are you ready?
Hi. Yes, good evening. The good news is that we were able to make payroll this week for this upcoming pay period. There was only one division that was that fell short of making payroll, and we were able to cover that, and they are anticipating that they will be able to give us that shortfall in funding over the next few days. So we were able, you know, that was a good thing. I've been talking with the general managers and the program directors as far as letting them know, you know, what the status is for payroll and how we stand as far as the funding. And everybody has been extremely helpful in working with Markeisha and myself, letting us know when deposits were coming in, how much they were anticipating to come in, who was going to be in a shortfall. And everybody did a really good job sort of working together, trying to get that done. Unfortunately, as we have for the past, you know, few months, as we struggle to try to make payroll, is that we have to then delay payments of some of our other bills. Right now we have roughly $213,000, in the bank. The KPFT and, WPFW have money in there. They have a higher amount that was in there from last month, but their fund drives and the money that they have raised so far is enough that's going to be able to, I know with WPFW, they have enough money that's going to be able to take them through covering their expenses and their payroll and such of that. So even though their cash on hand may be up, what they did is that they were able to raise enough funds that they needed to sustain themselves over the next few months. And the same with KPFT. They have enough, even though they have a low payroll, they do have enough to be able to sustain themselves with the equipment and the purchase and things like that they're doing as far as building up their building. So we still have, as I said, roughly about $213,000 in the bank. Our aged payables without central services is about $1.2 million. And then our aged payables with central services is about $3 million. We do have some current concerns as far as some of the past due vendors that we owe funding to. And we have been, Markeisha and myself, have been talking with people on a regular basis. Some of these vendors, as we're getting to a crunch time where certain vendors are being a bit more forceful in their requests for the money that we owe them, we are working very diligently trying to negotiate to keep some of, show good faith and pay what we can to our vendors or extend the due dates, which is what we're doing right now with a lot of our vendors, is trying to extend what those due dates were so we won't have any cancellations, and we can also try to not incur any of our any late fees. So we're pretty much working on that on a regular basis. We did have a couple of weeks ago a commercial broker that came to the Cuenca Boulevard West property to look through, and I spoke with them this afternoon, and they will be submitting their broker opinion of value by next week. So I'll be able to have that sent to everyone on the board for review prior to our meeting next week. The Radio Archives is planning their annual fund drive, which is coming up on November 15th. And then I was also talking with the interim general manager at KPFT with a program that they are doing for their fund drive that we're talking about taking that more on a national approach and doing a national fund drive with that general manager in the lead. We were just talking about that this afternoon, so we're going to be connecting again on Monday or Tuesday to try to then get that program, and it's more of a music-based program, as a national fund drive very early on in December. Does anyone have any questions?
I see Jim Dingman has his hand up. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you. Several questions. First of all, the general manager in Texas came out with a brilliant idea a few months ago about doing something with Bob Dylan. Basically having all the stations contribute their interpretations of Bob Dylan songs. And lo and behold, Bob Dylan has just come out with a new book. So I would think that that's something to explore. I even called up Mr. Wyman and told him about that 2 days ago. It was reviewed in the New York Times. So that'd be an interesting idea to actually get Bob Dylan involved, since of course he, as a young man, came on WBAI back in the early 60s. Secondly, the question of how much are we predicting that the stations are coming in with in terms of actual revenue on a monthly basis, as opposed to these bills, these fixed bills of payroll, et cetera? Because you're constantly bringing up, as we all are aware of, these this sort of very fragile sort of balance with all these different vendors. And I'm wondering, you know, what's the difference between the amount of money we're bringing in and the amount of money we have to pay for certain fixed costs and then dealing with the vendors, in terms of how to, you know, keep them under control. And I just wondered what thoughts you had about that.
The Bob Dylan program is actually what we're talking about to turn into a national fund drive. And we're actually working on getting the possibility of Mr. Dylan to actually do a PSA for us to kind of promote that as well and promote his book. So that is, that's what we're talking about. So as far as what's coming in, as far as the revenue is, we are only bringing in, the stations are really only bringing in the revenue that is needed to cover payroll. So the fund drives are not as robust as we would like them to be. And the amount of funding, as I said, that is coming in is just barely covering payroll. We've covered the cost of health benefits from last month, but every time that we are unable to, you know, that we work extremely, you know, that we're raising funds just to cover the payroll costs, we are putting off paying those vendors that are part of those day-to-day services. You know, we were at some point, if somebody was 30 days behind or 90 days behind, but there are a lot of these vendors at this point that are well over 120 days behind. And a lot of the vendors, you know, not a lot, but there are some vendors that are even over a year old. And so those are the ones that were just kind of, you know, hitting this perfect storm where people are being patient for just so long because there's been, you know, months and months and months of non-payment. So that's kind of where we are with a crucial aspect, is that some of those key bills that need to be paid for the day-to-day operations are dangerously close to not being paid and are at a point where there's, you know, a week or days where certain things will be canceled, turned off, or shut off. So that's what we're trying to negotiate, is extending some of those due dates and granting us a little bit more of a grace period.
Thanks. Heather, you're next.
Yes, I just want to mention, Stephanie, I would like to make sure that the affiliates are a part of this national fundraising for the archives. So I don't know if you've talked with folks about that, but if it's going to be national, it'd be great if the affiliates were involved in that as well.
I have a phone call with Ursula tomorrow afternoon.
Got this? So. Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll be talking with her as well. So that's great.
Okay. Perfect.
Jim McFadden and Jim Dingman. McFadden?
Yeah, maybe this was covered there because I just missed it. I assume we probably have archives of old Dylan, interviews and maybe even him singing. And I just wanted to, if that is something that's going forward, I just wanted to make sure the archives have been notified to start digging through and find them so that they can be replayed as part of that, effort.
Yes, KPFT had been working, have reached out to the archives director a while ago to kind of start that process when they first started thinking of doing this project for themselves.
Great. That's what I want to hear.
Thanks. Jim Dingman, go ahead.
All right. Now, in the meetings that you're having with the managers, right now we have a window of opportunity because we're current with our AFRs. And I'm wondering, and I'd like you to, at least if we're doing a national stream here, mention, of course, the difficulty of getting foundations at a macro level to commit to pay for our running deficits. Because in my experience, that always was the big bottleneck. On the other hand, there are all sorts of opportunities that would appear to be localized that could be exploited in each market area, Berkeley, Los Angeles, Houston, Washington, New York, like what's been going on with these underwriting issues. But I'm not talking about stuff that could enhance programming that we might explore. And I'm wondering what's going on in your mind with this balance of like the macro situation of the foundations, but also the fact that we can indeed exploit and get lesser sums to enhance our content right now. And I'm wondering if anything's going on in those realms.
We have on the KPFK side reached out to a few foundations regarding specific or programming specific to the Los Angeles area. And I've been working with New York as well with some specific asks and a campaign that we'll be working on. I'll be putting together the first drafts of the letters for the campaign, and then I'll be meeting with Bertold over the next few days just to kind of finish off those letters with him and have his input on that. When you are looking for funding with the conversations that I've had with the two foundations in LA that both declined the proposals, and they were for news coverage. They were both actually both of them actually were for the news department and working with interns and college students and things like that. One of the concerns that they had was the long-term sustainability. Foundations love to support programs, sometimes more so programs, not just a radio program, but just a program that a nonprofit is funding or is planning. But what you have to try to say that you have is also long-term sustainability, and what are your plans for that? Because a foundation may fund you for 1 year or one part of that program when it first starts, but they want to make sure that their money isn't being spent in vain if there isn't a way to sustain that program moving forward.
Yeah, just to follow up on that. Another question I have is, are we registered with the state National Endowment of the Arts and National Endowment of the Humanities throughout the country? Each state has monies appropriated to it down to that state level. I know in New York in the past, BAI has received money from the state National Endowment of the Arts, and I'm wondering if that avenue has been explored at all, or is that on anybody's radar screen? Because again, granted what you're saying about sustainability is an accurate statement. On the other hand, they're willing to, we're talking about dribs and drabs coming in that could actually add up as time goes on. So I'm just, again, talking about how we could perhaps exploit these kind of situations to our advantage and tactically in each local market.
I'll definitely look to see if we're enrolled in all of the states, or at least, registered with that. But yeah, definitely when we're doing some of these, particularly these offshoots of national programming, fund drive, I think that there's a great opportunity for foundations and individuals to support music-based program if we're doing, you know, if we are able to move forward with this Bob Dylan aspect. There's a lot of groups that I think would be more than willing to want to put their name to it and, you know, help support that. So when we look at some of these things that are very specific like that, it's a one-off, I think it's much easier to be able to get funding for it because they know that it's just a one-time thing that they want to be connected to rather than something that we're looking for long-term sustainability. But I'll look into the state Endowment of the Arts.
Thanks. Before I recognize the next person, I want to make two quick points. One is, Jim Dingman said we were current on our AFRs, and I just want to get some nomenclature right here. AFR stands for Annual Financial Report. That is a CPB-specific report. We don't get CPB money, so that's not something we've been doing these days.
AFS on the screen there for a second.
Yeah, you're not muted there, Darlene. AFS is the other term that is often used, and that stands for audited financial statements. We are current on our audited financial statements, so that's the thing that I just wanted to make. And the second point I wanted to make is that Vanessa Dixon Briggs is present now. Aki. So then I will continue to recognize people. Jim Sagerton, you're next.
Chair, you have 1 minute left on this item.
Thank you. Go ahead, Jim Sagerton.
Well, why don't I move to extend for 5 minutes or to exhaust the stack?
I second that.
Thank you. The stack is Jim Sagerton, Heather Gray, and Lawrence Reyes. So which would you prefer?
Exhaust the stack and, any objection.
Are there any objections to the motion to exhaust the stack? Hearing none. That's what we'll do. Jim Sagerton, go ahead.
Thank you. So I see that, you know, KPFT had traditionally done well with music, as has WPFW. And, basically we do long, hour-long programs with, we go in depth into issues. And part of what's happening with radio today is it's kind of surfacing from that depth and being quicker because the people that are listening are doing so in the car or in other places. So I just want to suggest that possibly we could go to another format, which would be a little bit shorter, you know, at some points in the day, particularly a morning drive and afternoon drive. And possibly have some better results. Also, music does almost universally better than any of our shows, other than our music shows, I guess. So that's something else we could consider is to pepper the music, have the music shows and then pepper it with our political perspective and hopefully reach a larger audience. Secondly, there's been some, questions about being honest with our listeners and having a national fund drive among the Pacific stations and then having a larger national drive among media organizations, et cetera. And I just, you know, the executive director has expressed that's not such a good idea because you don't want to be a downer, but we have a very dedicated listener core that provides most of our support. So maybe that would be an upper in that regard. And finally, you know, national fund drives,
your time is up, Jim.
Okay. I'll just finish this thought about national fund drives. I hope that we could, resume some national fund drives. And I understand the executive director has explained why it conflicts with local fundraising and blah, blah, blah. But in the past, historically, it has been a successful way to raise funds for the national office. I hope we could return to doing more of that. Thank you.
Heather, you're next.
I just wanted to mention it. I was working with Mark Torres of the archives actually last year, and one of the people who I know who we contacted who really wanted to help was Danny Glover. So here, and Danny helped actually. So it occurred to me that here we're talking about Bob Dylan, but also Danny help the archives. There are probably a lot of other well-known people who would be interested in helping the archives. So I think, I am sure that board members might have some other ideas along that line. So maybe that's a discussion we can have sometime, Julie.
Yeah.
And it's in exploring other people who might want to help in this effort.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, that does make sense. Lawrence, you're next.
Thank you, Jack. So Stephanie, how solid is this prospective collaboration with, Senor Dillon?
We just started speaking about this project on a national level this afternoon.
Okay. Thank you.
Got it. So now we've exhausted the stack on, this item. And so that's the ED report and Q&A. Next up was general counsel report and Q&A, although I do not believe Arthur is here. I didn't really expect him until the closed session. So then that takes us to item 6, which is unfinished business. We have two motions there. So the first is a motion to amend a previously adopted motion on delegate terming out, and this is Lawrence's motion. Lawrence, would you like to speak or read your motion?
Yes, Chair. Thank you. So this motion is supported by Directors McFadden, Director Sharon Salam, and myself. And the motion is to amend the resolution presented at the October 20th meeting, PNB open session, concerning extending the terms of those who have termed out by substituting it with the following motion codified in our bylaws as cited in our substitute amended motion. I'll go to the whereas clauses because I know you like those, right? Whereas the bylaws created an elected governance body of 24 with 18 listeners and 6 staff and provides a process for filling vacancies between elections. Whereas the first time elects of 2021 remain seated until December 2024, resolved that seats filled as a result of the 2020 election shall extend to December 2023, and further that all who began service as a direct result of the 2016 delegate elections and have turned continuously and have served continuously with less than a 12-month break will end service as of December 2022. That all vacancies shall be filled utilizing the runoff list in the October 2021 delegate election found attached to the links that I provided. The relevant bylaws are Article 4, Delegate Section 8, Terms of Office and Term Limits. Further, Chair, I'd like to suggest and I'd like to ask for those who would benefit in voting in favor of extending the 6-year term once it has expired, that they consider recusing themselves from this vote. So those are the whereas clauses, Chair. I don't know if you want me to read further, but I think I submit the motion as read.
Is there a second to Lawrence's motion?
I second it.
Thank you, McFadden. Discussion of this motion. Jim Sagerton, go ahead. Jim? Sagerton?
Sorry, I was muted, talking away, muted. Apologies. Yeah. I think that the explanation that was given by John Tatum in a previous meeting is the correct one. We need to replace directors as needed or as appropriate, and we have several examples in our bylaws or in our practices where we wait until a next election in order to replace delegates. The bylaws actually say that if a delegate, if a director is unable to serve during their term, then we go to the runners up. In fact, what we have here is a situation where we have a self-created, albeit by necessity, but a self-created lack of an election, then the delegates who are in place should continue to serve. Now, some have said that the requirement or the bylaws section that says under no event should anyone serve more than 6 years, that clearly did not contemplate the lack of an election. And I think in that case, because it clearly did not contemplate the lack of an election, Roberts takes over there. And Roberts, as was explained by Mr. Tatum and was elaborated on by others, it is the correct decision to let the current delegates serve until they are properly replaced by an election. And I pose to the people who support this that if they really want the runners up to take these places, what happens if we don't have an election next year and the year after that and the year after that? We don't know where we're going to go. I mean, hopefully we'll get some infusion of funds and we will have an election. What if we don't? Are they saying that we'll just have runners up until we get to where nobody got any votes and they're still replacing sitting directors? And if that's the case, then what will happen if, you know, after we run out of runners up, what will happen? We have no one replacing them. Thank you.
James McFadden, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to start out by saying we better damn well have an election next year. And I don't even want to think about contemplating anything other than that. We're going to have to cut something and to make sure that election happens. We're going to have a fund drive to make sure that election happens. That's something we have to do. So now, by saying that, by trying to claim that the people that wrote the bylaws didn't foresee that there might not be an election when they wrote in no event, I think in no event is pretty damn clear. In no event means in no event. No means no in this situation. And anybody who has a 6-year term is going to have to term out. And I think it only appropriate for those people, and there's only 4 of them, I think, on the PNB, that they should identify themselves as the 4 people that would be able to retain their positions on the PNB. Now, the argument I would make is that there's a difference between a term limit and a term. The way I read those bylaws is there's a 6-year term limit. You can have served 2 terms for 3 years each, but no one will serve more than 6 cumulative years without a year off. That's really the only term limit. Now, a term is something different. A term might be extended in the case of a lack of a quorum, or in this case, the fact of an election. We just have to extend those terms, and those people aren't going to get replaced. But I think the term limit is really only 6 years, and those people that have served those 6, it's time to step aside and make position for somebody who's an alternate. And it only affects 4 of us directors, and I really would like those directors to identify themselves.
Jim, your Thank time you. Is up. Yeah, good. Okay.
Lawrence, you're next.
Thank you, Chair, and I would for lack of a better word, an opinion from Mr. Tatum in regards to the conflict of interest. Those who would benefit from extending their terms should not. should consider recluding themselves. Also, the bylaws are pretty clear. Robert's rules of order do not supersede the bylaws. The bylaws are pretty clear. No's mean no. No's means no. And, you know, I refer you to the bylaw citation that I provided in the motion. Article 4, Delegate Section 8, Terms of Offices, Term Limits. I'm not going to go through the verbiage. Article 4, Delegate Section 10, Filling of Vacancies. So I'm getting a lot of folks that are saying that they will go to the, and I'm just going to tell you right now that they are going to go to the California Attorney General and file complaints. If this isn't resolved, and the breach of the bylaws is not resolved, then we're looking at, incurring additional problems. And I definitely do not want that. So I'm telling everybody that right now, I will not be the one that will file a complaint with the Attorney General, but there are those who are in the wings ready to file complaints with the Attorney General because of the breach of the bylaws. Now, okay. I know Susan mentioned that I wasn't a lawyer. No, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a social worker. But I am pretty well read in regards to the bylaws and regards to Robert's Rules of Order. So if you think that I have to be a lawyer in order to practice governance, then maybe you shouldn't be on the board either. Thank you.
Julie, can I say something?
I like a ruling about the conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Julie, could I say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, before, I'm not going to go to, asking Mr. Tatum just yet, because I want to say something before we ask Mr. Tatum to rule on conflict of interest. Yes, go ahead, Arthur.
Well, first of all, conflict of interest is defined in our bylaws as having a financial interest in the vote that you're going to be taking. So unless some LSBs are paying their members, under our bylaws, nobody has a conflict of interest in this issue. Just because it affects them doesn't mean that you have a conflict of interest. And that's been affirmed by the courts in cases involving Pacifica. Second of all, one of the things that I've learned on almost a daily basis is somebody sends an email complaining about something and copies the Attorney General's office. They get at least one email a day, maybe multiple ones, complaining about stuff going on in Pacifica. They have no authority to do anything about it. They can call us and say, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. But it's only in the most severe situations will they come in and seek to put to terminate the authority of a not-for-profit. So people can complain all they want to the Attorney General. There's a guy named Chris Lammerden. He tells me he gets it every day. Somebody sends him a complaint. We have been told, because there are people, namely Jan Goodman, who seems to like to file lots of papers against us, that if we put the losers in, that she'll sue, because there's no basis, to put, people in who lost, elections. So, you know, it's, do if you complain if you want, die if you don't. Like, we're going to get bashed on either side. I think that it's not unsafe to operate. There's two ways there's two ways to deal with it. You let the people that are there stay, or you go with a lesser number on the board, not putting people that lost.
Go ahead, Teresa. And I haven't forgotten, Lawrence, that you have but I didn't put myself on the stack. Go ahead, Teresa Allen.
On the stack, too.
Yeah, no, I see. It's Teresa, then Jim Sagerton, then Ali, then Egberto, then myself. And I'm going to put my hand up so that I remember.
Hasn't Jim spoken a few times on this?
I'll skip over Jim Sagerton. He only spoke once on this item. Go ahead, Teresa.
Sure, that was a legacy hand. I'll raise again if I need to.
I just believe this has already been discussed, and it's
we have a serious flaw in our bylaws in that we're using STV, but we did not create a low bar. We did not create a bar by which someone who is on the waiting list is too low and cannot be seated. It's just not right when you have, let's say you have 9 openings and you have 20 people running, and some people might not understand this, perhaps because they didn't have a vibrant competition for the boards. But if you work really hard and you garner the votes and you're seated, and then we go down another 9 people and want to fill other seats, and you go down further on the list, people that you competed with very actively because you differed in opinion, and then they're seated, and perhaps they, you know, at the way we go, some people leave the board just because they're just annoyed at the way we conduct business. So there's some attrition from that. And people can actually just make meetings so unbearable that people that have no other issues just can't handle our board meetings. But in this instance, to take those people who are so low on our list that they don't have a sufficient number of people that voted for them, that's just wrong. And that's what you're proposing here. So I would always vote against this. And I don't, as I'm supporting our council on this, that I don't see a conflict of interest. I'm more concerned about people. How can I tell you that I don't want this person to be elected
when I don't vote for them,
when I don't vote for a person and they're still seated? So I'll support the council on this and say no, I'm opposed to this motion.
Chair, we are at time on this item.
We still have a stack of at least 5 people here, folks.
Move to extend until we exhaust the stack.
And go ahead. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Jim Sagerton. The stack is Ali, Egberto, myself, Lawrence, and James McFadden. Any objections to the motion to extend to exhaust the stack? Hearing none. That's what we'll do. Ali Lexa, go ahead.
Okay, so this is more of a question, also to be perfectly clear. Whatever happens regarding the extensions or not extensions of terms, the PNB there will be a new election in January for a new PNB. So whether people on this current PNB have their term extended or not doesn't mean they'll still be on the PNB necessarily. Okay, just wanted to be clear that we're having a new PNB election in January.
No.
Regardless. Thank you.
Thank you, Ali. That's exactly correct. Egberto, go ahead.
Yeah, it really started to pain me to come to these meetings because it seems like the bridge, London Bridge, is burning, and we spend times on issues like this. The truth of the matter is none of this matters if somehow you go bankrupt, if somehow whatever happens. I just wanted to express frustration that it pains to be here. Mm-hmm. And because again, anybody who is going to an attorney general, anybody who is suing because they don't get their marbles, and I hate to just put it this way, cannot really care about this system. Thank you.
Thank you, Egberto. Ali made a point that I was going to make, which is, and this was related to what I was going to suggest to Mr. Tatum, in terms of, you know, is there even a perception of a conflict of interest if, in fact, in spite of extending delegate terms, because the motion was only about extending delegate terms, since no delegate has a guarantee that they would be reelected as a PMB director by their LSB, you know, is there in fact a bona fide conflict or appearance of a conflict of interest? And then the other point I was going to make, Lawrence asked for people to identify themselves. I've seen two lists and they don't have the same names on them. You know, so I think there's not 100% clarity on exactly who it is that we're talking about here. I think one of the things that is true is that an awful lot of people are at the end of a 3-year term at the end of this year. People who are currently on this, PMB. And then, there are, you know, something like a handful of people who are at the end of their 6-year term or, you know, at the end of their 6 years. And then the final point I was going to make, was simply that, you know, there are times where, I mean, and we know this, our bylaws are not perfect. And there are times when our bylaws are in fact in conflict with our own bylaws, right? And one of the things this body has to do is when our bylaws are in conflict with our own bylaws or exigencies such as the fact that we don't have the money to pay for an election this year, and this is not the first time this has happened in Pacifica, it is the duty of this body to determine what to do, period. And so that's what we're doing now. Well, that's what we did a couple weeks ago, but, you know, we're talking about that decision again now. Lawrence, you're up next, and then Jim McFadden. Lawrence.
Thank you, Chair. So they are currently 1, 2, 3 members that are termed out in this 6-year service. I want to report that Matula Shakur was just granted parole, so he's going to be a free man. So I just wanted to say that. Also, Chair, I think it is clearly a conflict of interest that if somebody gets the benefit, and I understand, if we narrow ourselves to the bylaws conveniently, when it benefits us, but not, when we think of the overall fair term of why the conflict of interest is. I know I serve on an executive board and there's certain things that are conflict of interest. And we know, you know, whether you, advocate or whether you gain some kind of benefit, I believe that that's a conflict of interest. Now, I understand that, a lot of us will be, you know, we'll have to face our LSBs, whether to get reelected again or not. My concern is I think that the bylaws are clear. The breach, continues. It has continued ever since I've been on this PMB. If people have disdain, for being of service to the PMB, then maybe they shouldn't postulate it themselves, to serve. Believe me, there's a lot of things I don't agree with either, but, I try to be as serviceable as best I can. So,
your time is up, Lawrence.
If I could get a parliamentary, ruling in regards to, if a person benefits from a vote, is that a conflict of interest? Thank you.
May I speak, Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Tatum.
Okay, I want to clear up something that I always have to clear up with this board, and that is that the parliamentarian does not make any rulings of any kind in a PNB meeting. It's only the chair. You know, not even Mr. Schwartz can make a ruling. He can weigh in on something, but it falls back on the chair. So the issue of conflict of interest, if I define it this way, you might be able to understand it a little bit better. A conflict of interest is when you, one person, is getting something that nobody else is getting. For instance, a big pot of money. You know, that's a conflict of interest. You probably can't vote on that. But no, just, you know, getting a position like an officer on the board or getting elected over again, that's not a conflict of interest because you're getting something that other people are also getting. And the other point that I want to make is that this is a very complicated situation. That's why a lot of people are debating. The bylaws, and you're right, Madam Chair, the bylaws, if I might say it, are screwed up because they conflict, you know, bylaws, in the bylaws of conflicts with itself. And so I'd like to talk to the PNB one day about having a company. I did talk to Beth Van Gunten about a company that could come in and just clean this whole thing up about the bylaws. But you're absolutely right, Madam Chair, when the bylaws conflict with itself, then you're absolutely right. It's up to the board to interpret the meaning, you know, and of course you can look at Roberts and see what Roberts did. Another thing I have to remind the board of is that when you have a resolution, don't forget that you have to amend the resolving clauses and then go back to the whereas clauses. The reason for that is because if, you know, if the resolving clause are amended, then it might be that the whereas clauses don't fit anymore with what you amended. So then you go back and you, you know, amend the whereas clauses if you want to. You don't have to. And finally, I will say that, you know, I've noticed the Pacifica bylaws and they're very, very strict. You know, the word removal and other words that you see in there, you know, very strict with that. And the other thing, and it was brought out this meeting that the bylaws are very strict that they don't want anyone serving 7 years. I think that the bylaws don't even want a person to serve one day past 6 years. And so we've got a situation here where we can't afford an election and therefore we can't leave these positions unfilled. So we're in a position where all of these termed out people are going to turn into vacancies. And the bylaws are pretty clear on how to fill vacancies. Thank you all for, you know, let me speak that long.
Thank you, Mr. Tatum.